Welcome to Late Night Poetry Jam on KKRN Community Radio. I am Pamela Spoto, poet and host.
In my heart, in my brain, on my tongue, behind my teeth. Behind my eyes, on my tongue, under my skin, in my heart. In my veins, under my skin, behind my teeth, on my tongue, on my tongue, on my tongue.
We are broadcasting from KKRN Community Radio in Round Mountain. We will host a bi-monthly poetry show the last Saturday of the month at 10 p.m. So here we go, Late Night Poetry Jam. I'd like to welcome Catherine Gessner to the studio. Hello, Catherine.
Hello. Nice to be here.
I am so glad you're here. I've been wanting you to be on the show, and here you are.
Here I am. I love talking about poetry. I'm glad to be here.
Good. And we're going to be doing a lot of talking about poetry.
Good.
I'd like to tell the audience a little bit about you as an introduction here, some basic information. And I want to make it clear, this is not everything about you. This is just touching on who you are and what you do.
All right, yes.
So, first of all, you're a friend of mine, and we've known each other. This is for how long?
20 years?
20 years. I was calculating that the other night, and I thought, that's not right. 20 years?
Yes.
Okay, so 20 years. And you're a colleague of mine. We've been working together for most of that time, the 20 years, and that you're also obviously a poet. And we have been in a writing group together, and you're in another writing group. And later on in the show, I would like to talk a little bit of have you say a few words about, or as many words as you want to, about writing groups and the value of them,
the benefits. Yes,
yes, yes. I think they're wonderful. And then we have performed together in the past. And
right.
One of the really, boy, that made me nervous though, was Sedge Thompson West Coast Live, and we were on stage at the Cascade Theater, and it went out nationally. It's very exciting.
Was pretty exciting. And when you're on stage, it's an odd sensation because all you can relate to is the spotlight, you know, and the mic in your face. It's very odd. So it closes you down. But we had fun with that.
We did. And I just took me back there just for a moment. We were standing there on stage. I mean, we were closer than what we're, you know, how we're sitting right now. And Sedge Thompson was right there, and he'd have the microphone right in our face and go, ask us a question. I'm like, whoa.
Yes, that was funny. And we didn't know what he was going to ask us either.
That's right. So I really did enjoy that. So we have worked together. We've known each other. We've written together. We've performed together. So our history is a good one.
Long and storied.
Yes, yes. And also I want to mention that you have your poems in many different literary magazines, and I'd like to read the title of a few of the magazines. Sejura, Blue Lyra Review, Louisiana Literature, Natural Bridge, The Manila Envelope, Numinous Magazine. I love that title, Numinous. Red Rock Review. I like that too. The Illuminations Book, the Squaw Valley Poetry Anthology. And also that you were for a poem, Cambodia Fabrics, was awarded honorable mention in nonfiction by New Millennium Writings. And we'll be talking a little bit more about Lotus Outreach as we go along, if you would like to do that.
Sure.
We were also in an anthology together. Well, we've been in a couple of anthologies together, but we put together Poets for Peace. But you have a new chapbook, and it's coming out, or it's not quite out yet, but it's coming out. Scrub Jays in Lavender, and the focus of this show is going to be on that chapbook, and probably the year or year and a half, 2 years leading up to the publication of that chapbook.
Right.
And I also want to tell the audience that you were born in Pennsylvania, and you taught at Arkansas and Missouri State. You moved to California in 1994 to Junction City, mm-hmm. and you were staying at the Buddhist, would you call it the Gumpa?
Chagdud Gumpa Foundation. Yes, mm-hmm. I moved there.
And then I do have, and you started teaching at Shasta College at that time, and that's when I met you. You were teaching part-time, and then very shortly thereafter, you started teaching full-time, and we've been working together ever since. Do you want to say a few words about the Lotus Outreach? Because that seems to me that has been a really big part of your life, and you were traveling to Cambodia and helping helping with the young women, the girls that were in the sex trade conditions. Could you speak to that a little bit? Do you want to say anything about that at this point?
Yes. Well, you know, we've been educators together for all this time, but the educational opportunities that are available in California are not available worldwide. Some people don't even realize that in other countries you have to pay for a primary education. And, you know, women and girls are often not educated in some of the developing world because they're caring for children, more children. And so Lotus Outreach actually addresses education for women and children in India and Cambodia. For me personally, though, why Lotus Outreach, why I joined that board, because it was Southeast Asia, because, you know, I was born during the Vietnam War era, and we lost people from Upper Black Eddy, Pennsylvania, to that war. I remember when in the Tet Offensive occurred in 1970, and that's one of my first memories as a five-year-old child. So though I was very young at the time, it influenced me, and we had a significant loss. And I always wanted to be part of what happens after the U.S. is at war in a country, repairing, bringing back healing and to the earth and to the people there. And Lotus Outreach, you know, I wrote a grant. We had 75 girls in school. The Australians loved our program. They did some more fundraising. We got 500 girls in school. But of the original 75, 69 graduated from high school, and they have just graduated from college. Some of them have just graduated from college. So it's been a really heartful thing for me to see these young women now participating, working, doing things other than they would have been doing, maybe forced into sex work or that kind of thing because they didn't have an education. So now they'll be the ones who are instrumental in changing the culture and offering something else to their daughters. So it's really been a good thing. I'm very happy about it. And I think Lotus Outreach is out there on the web. Although I'm no longer on the board, if anybody's interested in learning more about that.
And that is a wonderful project. And a great story. And thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So I want to bring us now to your new chapbook, Scrub Jays in Lavender. And I believe it's 32 pages, 26 poems.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what we're going to be focusing on and what led up to the writing of this wonderful book. And it's published by Finishing Line Press, an independent press. And we're also going to be talking about what it means to be an independent press and what that might entail for the person who's getting published with an independent press.
Right.
Now, we talked about a week ago, before we do these shows, I talk to the poet or to the writer, and it's just fascinating things have been happening in your life.
Thank you.
That'd be one way of looking at this.
Right.
And there is a very fascinating aspect to this. What you chose to do with a diagnosis that you were given in October, I believe, 2013.
Right.
And the diagnosis was with breast cancer.
Yes.
And you had to have surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to have radiation.
Yes.
And your mother flew out from Pennsylvania to stay with you in October and November. And I remember when we were talking, you were saying, you know, what, you know, kind of, I don't exactly know the words, but how you were, what was impressive to me is how you decided to face what was going on in your life in terms of writing. And one thing that you said is that you decided to put books of poetry all around your house and pens or pencils near these. So can you kind of share a little bit of the beginning of this process? Because from this situation, this chapbook arrives. And I think sometimes people think that, and maybe it's true that writers just pull information from, you know, out of the ethers, and that's what they write about. But in my case, I write about what's going on in my life, where my passion is, what's holding my heart, what's going on. And it would appear that that's exactly what you were doing at this time, how you were going to put this experience or live this experience through writing. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I was diagnosed with breast cancer as we were really going into a major drought here in California. So it seemed to me I wasn't separate from the world outside of me, that I was, you know, symptomatic of some of the climate change illness of the earth. And I wanted to write about that, but it wasn't really an idea so much as something that sort of came out of that experience. The words started tumbling out onto the page, and in a new way, they seemed to organize themselves into this chapbook. What happens is, you know, all those previous years of writing poetry and publishing poetry came together in this crisis to produce these poems, and I felt like I was just receiving them. And what I was trying to do was sit down each day and make sure the day was meaningful, and in that dedication, to ask what words are coming today for me to be able to understand what's happening and relate to it in my own world, and to communicate how I am a part of the historical present of everyone else who's going through this particular experience, a drought, a cancer, a diagnosis, that kind of thing.
And I think that's just that really is fascinating about how we make our day meaningful.
Yes.
And I don't know how many of us really truly think about that, but in the grips of a serious illness, that certainly can make us more aware of how we're going to live our life, how we're going to spend the day. And when we were talking, you told a story about your mother being in your house, and you wanted to write these poems for your mother, for the earth, for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you told me a story about her washing windows. Could you tell us that again?
Well, she wanted to come and offer something to me, and it's really a great gift to have her be able to fly out and just come and visit with me and my son. I have a child who was 16 at the time. And because you don't want to go into, you know, any kind of sadness. You want to say, you know, let's be positive. Obviously, people get over this all the time. You know, we can repair the earth. We can do these things. So she asked me what would be best. She wanted to vacuum my floor. She wanted to clean the house. She wanted to wash the dishes. And I said, you know, I would like to be able to rest during radiation and look out the window and see what's out there. And, you know, my windows and my blinds are dirty. So she, you know, 74 at the time, went and cleaned all the blinds and all the windows so that I could sit and look out the window during my period of recuperation and see the birds outside. And it became very, very great gift for me to be able to look out the window there.
That's a beautiful story. I mean, to clean the windows so that you can have a clear, you know, a clear vision.
Yes.
And that your mother was... Well, that just kind of just really touches my heart.
Yeah.
Willing to do that for you.
Yeah.
And then from there, I find this particularly interesting too, with Tupelo Press, which is another independent press. I had a project, would you say a project or a contest, a project of 30 poems in 30 days. And that is what you took up, that the 30 poems in 30 days, which eventually led to your chapbook. I'm Pamela Spoto, poet and host of Late Night Poetry Jam on KKRN Community Radio. I'm in the studio with poet Catherine Gessner. We're talking about her life, and we're also talking about her poetry chapbook called Scrub Jays in Lavender. And one thing that Catherine said is that she would like her poems to reach a place of calmness, of honesty, of prayer, and of peace. So keep listening. So can you talk a little bit about this, I mean, or more, 30 poems in 30 days. How do you, I mean, that's intimidating in a way. You know, how do you find material? Do you feel pressure? You had to get, each poem had to be sent in by a certain time each day for, and the press is on the East Coast, is that correct?
That's right. And there's that 3-hour time difference. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I couldn't send the poems in at 6 o'clock at night for me, because that would be, you know, Marie Gauthier, who was taking the poems and putting them up on the web, she would be asleep. So, or headed to bed. Well, Tupelo Press is an East Coast press, and they do a lot of wonderful work publishing poetry. And I don't think everybody knows that a lot of poetry in this country is published by university presses, so it receives the subsidy of the university. So there are a few independent presses that are actually publishing and making their money from poetry, but they have to do their own fundraisers. So I thought, well, since I'm writing so much all of a sudden, I'm going to commit to doing this fundraiser for Tupelo Press, where I asked my friends and supporters to support me during a 30-30 challenge, which is 30 poems in 30 days, which I did in January of 2014. And that's my mother's 75th birthday, January 13th, or it was. Now she's a year older. And so I've also felt it was a gift to her. What are we doing in this historical present? She's turning 75. I'm writing poems, you know, and there are holidays in January. There's supposed to be snow and rain, but there isn't. So there's anxiety about that. Mount Shasta is bald. You know, no snow the first time ever last winter. I couldn't even believe it. You could walk all the way up to Bunny Flats, or drive all the way to Bunny Flats. So the project came out of that, and each day I was producing a poem. I was producing actually about 6 or 8 poems a day.
Wow.
Because, you know, you have that inner critic, you know, as a poet.
So, I do.
So which one of these is going to make the cut, you know, because they're all terrible, is the first, you know, what you're thinking. And so I had to really work through that and work through the terribleness of the early drafts. Sometimes, you know, I would read them to my son, or I would read them to my partner, Paul, you know, how bad is this, you know, kind of thing. Let me hear it out loud. And so the thing about the 30-30 challenge is just putting up what's raw and open and, you know, a draft, and letting the world see it on the Tupelo Press stage, which they have a lot of readers and, you know, huge audience for the poems. And there were 6 or 8 others who were also in that January challenge with me, so we were reading each other's poems. So I got to know new people online, which sounds strange, new poets, and I got to work with them and kind of do the call and response that poetry does. And all of a sudden, I had an audience, and I was relating to them. They were writing back to me. They were commenting, people I didn't know. And so that shaped the project into something that was like a vessel, you know. And so that's why at the end of it, I said, wow, let me collect some of these poems from this vessel and put them in order and send them out for consideration at other independent presses. And, you know, by June, I had an answer from Finishing Line Press. Yes, we'd like to publish this collection. So it came from this impetus of doing 30 poems in 30 days for Tupelo Press.
And I know that you said that these poems, or this way of writing, is very fresh, very raw, and very real.
Yes.
And I like that. It's curious how you may have found your subject matter. And I remember that you had said something about walking out of your house onto your back porch and dropping a cup.
Right.
And then from that action, a poem came. Is that?
Yes.
So is that kind of how some of these came about, what was just touching you at that time?
Yes, well, I live in downtown Reading, so that's a good thing in many ways because a lot is always happening around my house. You know, so, for example, the last poem that I wrote for 3030, which becomes the first poem in the book, Crossroads, it begins with the green glass beer bottles out in the intersection. And somebody said to me, well, beer bottles are brown. And I said, oh no, you know, and then we started naming the kinds of beer that come in green glass bottles, Rolling Rock and, you know, that kind of thing. So so it begins with this, you know, I've walked out in the morning and there's broken glass. And then there was another time, I try not to take my pottery outside because I go outside in the morning for my observations and you're just first awakened, you know, just so about, you know, somewhere in the 50% range of those mugs, if I take them outside, have hit the pavement. So now I take out, you know, the stainless steel cups and that kind of thing. It's because I get distracted by starting to look at the hummingbirds and the bees and looking at the flowers, and I forget about the cup and kick it over, you know. So, yeah, that's a good thing because I'm beginning to observe, I'm beginning to write the poem if the cup has hit the ground. So I would be happy to read both of those poems if you wanted me to.
I would very much like that. And I thought we could begin with Crossroads. And would you like to say a few words about that? Because there's a horse and there's a dream and there's a trail and there's a feeling of not dying and there's the gift of animals. So do you want to say something about this poem?
Yeah, a couple of poems or a couple you asked me at one point, did I heal myself through writing the poetry? And the answer is, well, I got a message about how I was doing in my body through the poems and in a way. And I always feel like if I dream about horses, I'm going to get well. And so right before the end of this 30-30 challenge, I dreamed that a horse came to me through the woods as a gift. And the next day, I went out to the Brandy Creek Trail, got out of my car, parked the car, got out of the car, and was standing there. And a horse with saddle and bridle on came trotting through the woods by itself to me. And nobody around. There were children and dogs in the parking lot and everything, so I felt the need to catch the horse, which he let me do. And the horse, as soon as I got a hold of his reins, took a big sigh of horsely relief that somebody was attending to him, which, you know, gave me a great feeling of confidence in my health and in the world and in the gift of animals. You see reflected yourself, your healthy self. And so I stood there and waited with the horse until his attendants finally caught up with him. And the next round of riders came dashing through the woods on the horseback saying, thank you, thank you, thank you, because I had caught this horse. But this horse was a much greater gift to me than I was to him. So the poem came from this experience, Crossroads.
Did you say that initially this was the last poem in your book, or the last poem of the 30-30, and then it became the first poem of your chapbook?
It was the very last. I think it was January 30th. It might have been January 31st. But I knew when I finished it that it was the opening poem.
Good.
Crossroads. Things are out of control this morning. Beer bottles shattered in the intersection. The power out. Lights blinking red. Everyone doing the slow crawl. Radials steel-belted through the green glass shards. I remember driving the Oklahoma panhandle toward sunrise, the buffalo restful, silhouetted, grazing national grasslands alongside the road. Gully swallowed the car mid-flight, flash flood control channels in the flat cities of the plain, shocks bottom out. Jackrabbit darting, that hard metal sound against asphalt. Flashback to people on the crosswalk. It's almost my turn to go. Valve rattle. Coffee would help me gather force, prevent uncertainty from ruling the day. It's about to rain hard. Last time a storm blew through, a transformer got tagged by lightning. last night, like always when change comes, horses crested the hill in my dream. Cross country. One came to me, saddle and bridle, my hand outstretched in welcome.
It's a lovely poem. It's a lovely poem. The ending of this, is it both the dream and the reality of the situation of the horse coming, I mean, really coming out of the hills with a bridle and saddle and no rider to you? So it's bringing those two together.
Yes. Uh-huh. It's a rare thing, I think, when horses come from the woods by themselves.
I think so, too. And right up to you.
Yes. Nice chestnut gelding. He was very sweet.
Ah, and so you were saying that you have this belief or this sense or this feeling that a horse in a dream, it meant to, there's something about life giving and healing that you felt that was a symbol of life in a way.
Definitely. And when we have cancer, we have to wait for the doctors to give us the go signal, right? And they like to hold all the cards, you know, and tell us. As far as I was concerned, when that horse came to me, I was in remission. And there has been nothing the doctors could say different. I'm glad they confirmed my suspicions.
Good for you, by golly.
Yes.
Did you want to read the poem about the cup now? I do want to ask you about this three-part Lectio Divina, but we'll get to that after. Are you going to read your broken cup poem or drop?
I will.
Okay, good.
And this is midway through the book, and it was about midway through the 30-30 challenge, and it's called Stoneware. I reference Trinity County through the poem. For those of us who are local, I mention Olson Stoneware, which has, I have a lot of their products and drink out of their cups, and they have a store in Weaverville, so they're in here, Stoneware. Groggy with last night's error, I step out the kitchen door to morning, curve of sleeplessness on me. I stumble over simple cracks in concrete, and shattered potsherds line the underbelly of everything I think might happen. Sharp edges underfoot, and me still in slippers. Another hand-hewn mug from Olson Stoneware has hit the pave. Clumsy, clumsy, full of my oolong with milk. Brooming up in spite of myself, I rejoice in the chime broken pottery makes, swept. The hummingbird in lavender at the far side of the yard knows what I mean. Time for this, for the sweeping. Decent neighbors hurry beyond the back fence to work. The diesel Mercedes roar to yellow speed, whips past the corner, departing while I dustpan the remains, chunking them in the trash bin. Atonement. Today has cleared away all obstacles.
Ooh, and your images are so clear and lovely, and I picture you out walking out there in your slippers, and
yeah,
and then the porcelain cup goes down. It's interesting too that the sound of the breaking is like music.
Yeah, there's a lot of music in this book or relating to guitars or sounds. There's, you know, a poem called Slather the Muse Buds. I began listening more deeply to the sounds of words as they were arising, not always logically from, you know, my morning tablet. And so just the sounds coming together and what is it that I'm hearing?
You know, I just wrote down there's the beauty in the breaking.
Yes.
And yes, there's beauty in the breaking. I'm Pamela Spoto, poet and host of Late Night Poetry Jam on KKRN Community Radio. I'm in the studio with poet Catherine Gessner. We're talking about her life, and we're also talking about her poetry chapbook called Scrub Jays in Lavender. And one thing that Catherine said is that she would like her poems to reach a place of calmness, of honesty, of prayer, and of peace. So keep listening. Now, I want to ask you about Kate, is it Faddick?
Yes.
Lectio Divina. And as I understand it, now, this was her poem, and she wrote the first two parts, and it needed a third part, and you were invited to write that.
Well, one of the other poets from the Tupelo Project in December of 2013 was Kate Faddick, and she wrote a poem. And then Laura Kaminsky from Missouri, who is a poet I just met during the 3030 Project as well, she wrote a response to it. So it was the first two parts of Lectio Divina. And they turned to me and said, you know, there's a third part, and we'd like for you to write it. And I thought, I don't even know anything about this. I'm not Catholic, and I haven't studied this. So I spent some time researching it. What does it mean? And I'd like to read the poem, The Practice, because I think for me, as both a Buddhist and a Catholic, which I can be in my own heart, that this poem brings all of those stages together. But what Kate did and what Laura did was, instead of using the Bible or a sacred text for their contemplation, they used the news. And the news in the Middle East and Syria and that kind of thing. So the news of war becomes the text for a spiritual contemplation. So their poems are there still on the Tupelo Press 3030 site, and this is my response in a psalmodic, calm response kind of way, in a contemplative kind of way. I think these are quiet activist poems, I was telling somebody earlier. So here we go, The Practice. Nothing like a passion fire, a burned village, or a poet's tongue slashed, throat cut in Syria to remind me to chant, one hand turned up in invocation, inhaling, the fist starts to let go. I lean into the subcutaneous news, human disasters, the murderers, hardened muscles obsessed as storm fronts, wanting to lash and drive down. In the bold relief of a blank wall, cushioned next to skull cup and sacred text, or even a whole glass stupa full of crushed skulls, add sugar to the tea. Hold the hands small children proffer. Rest with the turbulence, the swift eddies. Exhaling, wishing goodness upon them. Let all the others be first.
The juxtaposition in that poem of the images is amazing.
Oh, thank you.
I know that, and that I think this is what you said. So correct me if I don't have this quite right. That sometimes you don't face the issue head on, but you face it in a less direct manner. And I think that you had said you're hoping that people will read these poems and they will come to a quiet, a calmness, a peace, a peacefulness. Is that so?
Yes. I mean, there's so much of the other kind of activism out there, and I do consider myself an activist for the earth, mm-hmm. even though these mm-hmm. poems are quiet, but I want people to be able to hear the earth so they mm-hmm. know to protect her and they know that they're connected to her. And so all the images come from that contemplation and come from that place, and it's kind of a you know, quiet place, but I do feel like that's important for people to know what there is to lose. Because if you're always out on the freeway or on your cell phone, you haven't noticed that there's a planet out there.
Yes, yes, that's true. I think we are steadily unplugging from the planet to our misfortune.
Yes. Well, and, you know, that's interesting to call people those environmentalists, you know. And I think I always laugh to myself because, really, do you breathe, my dear? You know, you are an environmentalist. So, yeah.
Need those oceans, need those trees to give me the oxygen.
Truly.
That I need to breathe. You know, we are all connected.
Yes.
In this web. Would you like to read a recipe? And I have, is this a contemplation of death?
Yep.
Okay. And then I'm intrigued by this title, Window Yin Tree. Those two poems, I thought maybe you could share those with us and tell us a little bit about them.
Well, recipe arose naturally as a sonnet, which surprised me, but it was exactly what I was thinking about. Like, okay, bad news, the planet's in drought, you know, CO2 emissions, and I'm going to die, and, you know, that kind of thing. That's what I thought initially, and of course, that's true. I am going to die, but what to do about that? What to think about that? Recipe. No use arguing about what is. Soup, in time, chills in the bowl. A woman cannot run kitchens the way she runs her life. That rhyme, reason, and song do not last. That a son grows up like his mother. That a day comes when all small perils collapse in real death. Hers, in River City. Beside undone factories, sullen motels, agribusiness, wealth-making. Do not worry. Trees will leaf out in spring. Bald eagles dance the cliffs above swift water. Poppies gold blossom segments of the radiant dry earth. Chance lovers trail fingers in the current. Hold tight to the joy a sudden rainstorm brings. Osprey rises with a fish, flashing strong wings.
I really love that transition. I was looking at this poem. I mean, the first stanza about the soup and time chills in the bowl. And then that transition of do not worry, because the trees will leaf out. It's like rising from the the offspring, rises with a fish, flashing strong wings. You know, I'm getting stronger and stronger and I'm rising. And you had said this chapbook is not about cancer. It's about life.
It is about life, yes, truly. And we get so caught up in what our individual stories are. And if we actually lean into the listening and lean into the collective and lean into the offering, I think it makes everything more meaningful, a little bit easier. And we're able to maintain the optimism we need. A lot of my friends who are scientists are optimists, total optimists, even, you know, unreasonably so. And we have to be, because we have to keep trying. We have to keep trying to keep it going for all of us, you know. So
I like this poem so much. So let's hear another one, please.
Well, you know, in the space of that time, it was very windy and cold and dry, blowing down off Mount Shasta, and the wind was hitting the north side of a friend's house. So we decided we were going to plant a tree out there in the hopes that it would block a little bit of the wind coming down. And it's called Window Yin Tree, so trying to soften. I've been digging and planting a ponderosa in a fence row, intended to beautify the view, to cut the sweep of wind down from Mount Shasta. Harsh conditions around the volcano, all 14,000 feet of heady oxygen-deprived desire sometimes make reparations necessary. All I can think of is Shakespeare. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May. The ponderosa I cradle between my knees, pull from the pot midwinter, bound as she was by hard rocky soils crusted to the interior of this small pot, needs a timorous loosening to place her safely in bat guano soil mixture next to the manzanita. Let her tall up, the tender one.
Thank you. This line, I don't know what, I love this line. I'm wondering if you could speak to it. It's that heady, oxygen-deprived desire. I mean, I love that.
Yes. Well, I've always felt really good up there when I get up there in Mount Shasta, you know, and it's because you're a little lightheaded, and it's just like so gorgeous. And then you're up there, you know, just go up there and kind of relate to it. And you just want more of it. More of this beauty, please. Bring it on. You know, Panther Meadow. You know, I have other poet friends who've written about that place. How wonderful. We should just go up there on a regular picnic all the time, read poetry and sing. I mean, it's really wonderful.
It is. It is. Mother Shasta.
Yes. I heard the banjo player, Tony Furtado, up there. Can you imagine out there in Mount Shasta with just those banjo strings? And you know, it was beautiful. So, yeah.
My. And this, I don't know whether, for me, your last poem and this poem, the ending of your last poem about the osprey and the wings strong, and then, you know, you're tending to this little ponderosa, you know, let her tall up. I like that, the tender one.
Right.
That's so beautiful.
Have you ever seen those smaller versions of our, you know, lodgepole pines are usually so tall, but the little ones growing up, they are quite impressive themselves. They're like little ferns, you know, beautiful.
I do want to ask you, when we were talking, you said that you are an eco-poet or eco-poet.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to speak to that a little bit about, I mean, I know you are very attentive to Mother Earth and you love Mother Earth and your ability to see is very clear in that way. Is that part of being an eco-poet?
Well, I think, you know, it forms my moral landscape. The idea that I was outside running around as a child, probably I had about 20 acres available to me every day for my afternoon walk Ooh. With my dog. And I didn't know that this was a gift. I didn't know that this would go away and that I would have to find places and go to them in my adulthood, you know, to find 20 acres to walk in if I wanted to. So it makes me an eco poet, even though it started as I just love doing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people ask me, what is it that you're successful at? What have you done most in your life? And I can say, I've walked. I mean, I know Henry David Thoreau wrote about that, but think about it. In our adult life now, where are the places that we can go undisturbed on a long walk? And few and far between, but we live near quite a few of those places, luckily. And that informs my daily writing. It informs my peace within. It informs my optimism, informs my imagery. Somebody once said to me, Catherine, I don't get from nature what you get from nature. Somebody was born and raised in a city. And as much as he can't relate to me, I can't relate to him. You know, I feel like it's essential for me to write poetry and to walk in nature. I couldn't do it without that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know I live on a small 5-acre parcel, and I'm out in the garden sometimes. And I just wonder if there are any undisturbed areas where it just has the natural sounds, because at times, you know, being in the garden, I mean, it's just very natural in terms of the sounds and the colors and the life. And then a plane will fly over or
right.
a big truck will shift gears. And so that intrudes into that space of, into that natural space.
Okay.
You know, I want to read the dedication to the book because it is true, human beings intrude, but we are also turning back to humanity and when we're in nature. So the dedication at the beginning of the book is from Terry Tempest Williams. Once strengthened by our association with the wild, we can return to family and community. Each of us belongs to a particular landscape, one that informs who we are, a place that carries our history, our dreams, holds us to a moral line of behavior that transcends thought. And in each of these places, homework is required, a participation in public life to make certain all is not destroyed under the banner of progress, expediency, or ignorance. We cannot do it alone. And that's from Passion and Patience in the Desert, her book called Red, mm-hmm. Passion and Patience in the Desert.
And so what about that particularly just got a hold of you where you wanted to have that as your, you call this the dedication?
Yes. Well, this particular book includes the petition to Congress for preserving the Escalante Wilderness and definitions of wilderness. And she has been one of the most successful environmental activists of the West, preserving land spaces for all of us. And she's doing that for humanity. I think that's the misunderstanding that, you know, this isn't about the environment. It's about all of us right. having health and places to be and togetherness. And we need to work together. We need to let go of our fundamental differences, whatever they are, and come to the common goals of, you know, sharing space. So
sharing some beautiful space, the natural space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the natural spaces that were my childhood, I think we just talked about. And I'm from a river town, and I live in a river town now. How important water is to sharing and making sure we share it equitably and that kind of thing. So that's what I'm very interested in.
I'm Pamela Spoto, poet and host of Late Night Poetry Jam on KKRN Community Radio. I'm in the studio with poet Catherine Gessner. We're talking about her life, and we're also talking about her poetry chapbook called Scrub Jays in Lavender. And one thing that Catherine said is that she would like her poems to reach a place of calmness, of honesty, of prayer, and of peace. So keep listening. There are so many things that I want to ask you about, and I know that we don't have a whole bunch of time left, but these are some of the themes or the issues or the ideas that maybe we can touch on. You know, independent presses, writing groups, you teach creative writing classes. And then there's always, I mean, there's the creation part and the creativity. And I know that we tell our students sometimes about, you know, the editors talking and just, you know, get the creative thoughts down and we'll deal with the editor later. But then it comes to the promotion part of getting material out. And that involves a lot of legwork that I don't think that many people know about or what that entails. So I thought maybe these were some of the items that we could talk about as well as hear some more poetry.
Sure.
Depending on how much time we have left. Our engineer is looking at us. So why don't
about 5 minutes.
one thing that you said, which I really like, you said the poems in the chapbook became their own order.
Yes.
It wasn't like you sat down and said, okay. It was like they manifested the order that they wanted to be in. And
well, you know, Pamela, I don't know. I mean, early on in poetry, as other people were instructing me, they were saying, you've got to get out of the way of what the poem is trying to say. And I thought, what is that person talking about? But then I actually had the experience of this, of the poems are beginning to speak back to me, and I'm listening to them. I'm hearing what they're saying, and they are ordering themselves. The words are coming to me. And so I think I didn't give them enough of a listen before. But of course, I did lots of years of training beforehand and in poetry to try to know what a poem says to people. But these began speaking to me, you know, and right in the middle of the book is the Martin Luther King Day poem. But again, I didn't want to write an activist poem about Martin Luther King Day, but I did. I wanted to write about my yard and what I saw there. And so that is a center point in the poem because it's a center point in January, but it's also a center point in all of our lives, getting along with each other.
Right, Right. You know, sometimes when I hear fiction writers talking about developing characters and coming up with characters, and they'll say, and the characters started, they started speaking for themselves. And I'm thinking, well, of course, they're not speaking for themselves. They're coming from your mind. They're coming from your body. They're coming from your heart. You know what they're going to say. And they'd swear, no, no, you know, the characters become alive, you know, in their own right. And that's kind of what I'm hearing you say with the poems, that the poems, you created the poems, but they started speaking to you.
Yes, they did.
That's fascinating,
It is fascinating. I mean, I started, you know, just sort of listening and writing words down. I didn't begin with an idea anymore. I began with sound. And I had actually talked to a songwriter about that. How do you start your songs? And he starts with, you know, units of sound and pronunciation of words within those units of sound. And so I started listening for that. And, you know, lo and behold, there were poems that came out of listening. What sounds like you're listening to nothing, right? Yes.
So I'm going to give you a choice. We can either hear Scrub J Domain, or we can talk about independent presses. We're going to do both, but which one would you like to do first?
Let me just read the Martin Luther King Day poem, because it's important for the timing. This one's called Scrub J Domain. And the Scrub Jay is the actual name of the bird, of the Western Blue Jay. And my yard, also a very bossy kind of jay. The western blue jay and his lot tear up yard and tree, fighting fast, skirt trunks and screech, dive bomb and harass until all others relinquish their position. I miss the delicate bluebirds driven out. Tanagers, brown sparrows with their small stay, purple martin. That's it. No variety here among the warrior clan. Not even magpies. A murder of crows across the street sheds pecans from the large tree, hurdles the jays windward when the flight paths cross. Ravens stay distant, proud, and leave the squirrels to pick up. I know these guys will cycle around, move on. The robins will return, gather their numbers, hop along the shimmering morning grass, yellow eyes cocksure for hidden earthworms. Overthrow the desperate, agitated lordship, the feathered beauty, western jays.
Thank you. So this was written on Martin Luther King Day in 2014.
Correct.
And Can you speak to that just a little bit, this poem and Martin Luther King Day?
Yeah, it's the idea that somehow we're all very territorial, just like the birds in my yard, and we base our territoriality on skin color, and that's not real and true. It's actually, we need to cycle through and recognize that there's plenty for all.
Yes. And I really do. I like that poem a lot, and it's metaphoric and in that way. So can we talk a little bit about independent presses, Tupelo and Finishing Line? Because we're running short on time, maybe we should talk a little bit more about Finishing Line Press, because there was the idea of buying the book in advance. And you had mentioned that you didn't want to bother people, but yet with small presses, in order to have them remain solvent, they also needed help in terms of publishing monetarily, in terms of publishing works. Now, we're not talking about self-publication. We're talking about a small press, an independent press. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, they accepted the book and asked me to, determine the press run by doing pre-sales. So then I had to go out and ask people, hey, if you are thinking you might buy my book of poetry someday, now is a good time, but you won't get it until January, February next year. And so I had to solicit, and it seemed a little awkward, you know, but it became a way to engage people in the sense of audience. And it also became a time for me to talk about how poetry is published in this country, that it's either supported by universities who have a budget or it's supported by fundraising. And that's what Finishing Line Press is doing. They are doing tremendous work. They are one of the leading publishers of chapbooks in the country, and they're in Georgetown, Kentucky, all by themselves. They don't associate with anybody else. And because they're independent, just like this radio station, they have needs. And so, you know, that's what happened. And so hopefully my book will arrive soon and people will have enjoyed their wait. And I really appreciate all my friends and supporters who went ahead and purchased in the pre-sale period.
Thank you so much, Catherine. And I think our engineer is signaling that we're out of time, past time. I'm Pamela Spoto, poet and host of Late Night Poetry Jam. I would like to thank Catherine Gessner for being here for this hour, talking about her life and her new chapbook, Scrub Jays in Lavender. And for the listeners, Late Night Poetry Jam will be on the last Saturday of each month now, starting at 10 p.m. And thank you so much for listening. Bye.